Welcome back to the program. Pleasure to be with you, and a real pleasure to welcome to our studios for the first time the great Dinesh D'Souza, the author most recently of America, Imagine a World Without Her, and of course the movie that is in theaters that you need to go see. Americans need to see this movie before we get to the fall elections, because I don't want to imagine America, a world without America. Dinesh, it is a pleasure to have you in the studios. You're trying to sign books at the same time. I don't know if you can multitask like that, but you're a better man than me.
Lars, I'm thrilled to be here. It's fantastic to be on the show. And the movie, wow, we just surpassed Michael Moore's film, Capitalism. So we're now the number six highest grossing film, which is really cool. So we have number two, which is 2016, and now we have number six with the America film.
That is fantastic. And people should know that, and I warn them ahead of time, that the first 20 minutes of the movie, when you lay out the liberals' indictment for what is wrong with America, all the various things that are wrong with America, and then spend the rest of the film explaining that those things are not factually well-founded.
I wanted to lay out the indictment of America. In part, this film in the fall, we'd like to show on a lot of campuses around the country. Mm-hmm. And for young people, you know, they get this shaming of America, as I call it, every day. My daughter's be a sophomore this fall in college, and this is kind of her curriculum. So when they see the film, if we show it on campus, I'd like students to see, yeah, that's what my teachers have been telling me. Now let's do a bit of an investigation to see if any of this is really true.
Look around you right now, and I mean, when you see the things that are on the screen right now, these protests by people who are, you know, protesting against America, you have a country that doesn't trust the government, that apparently doesn't trust the police. I wonder what you're thinking when you see these kind of developments happening in this great country.
Well, we don't know the facts about what's happened in Ferguson, and I think that the irony here is that you begin to get the fear of mob justice. You have people out in the street. They're pressuring the government. Now, who are they pressuring? I mean, you got Al Sharpton in there. Then you've got Eric Holder and you've got Obama. And all these guys are sort of in it together. I mean, they're in some senses, they're the ones who are now maneuvering the government's response to this situation. You begin to wonder, will justice come out at the end, or are we actually seeing a kind of a political maneuver here that's part of this shaming of America, as I call it?
I worry that what the mob seems to be demanding is, we want somebody's head right now, and we don't care what the facts are. We've prejudged the case, and that's the very thing that we've been fighting against in this country, is prejudice.
But yeah, part of what's going on here, I think, is that for the press, the way that they look at these events is through a kind of meta-narrative. The meta-narrative is the super story that controls the individual story. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if it had been, you know, a black cop who shot a white guy, that wouldn't be a story because it doesn't fit the meta-narrative. The meta-narrative here is America is a racist society. And so when an incident like this happens, everyone jumps because they go, see, this is further evidence, if we need any, that this is a racist country and this is a racist incident and this is the bad guy and this is the good guy. We've seen it now happening repeatedly, and the potential for miscarriages of justice becomes very high.
But does it also run the risk that when people say this is the meta-narrative, that when facts come into it, an autopsy is released, other information is released, that even if the facts belie the original indictment, that you're going to continue with the indictment?
That's absolutely the danger, that facts will be only seen through the prism of a predetermined conclusion. So I think this is a very worrisome situation. The protesters have a right to ask questions, but also, you know, you have looting. You've got people who basically think that one alleged injustice is a pretext for all kinds of other injustice to go excused and overlooked. And that's a very bad pattern.
And yet, if I think about that in purely intellectual terms, tell me if I'm wrong. When Elizabeth Warren and President Obama come out and say, you didn't build that, if you, Dinesh D'Souza, created that documentary and it's hugely successful, and books that are hugely successful, you can't take credit for that. That gives them license to come and take from you, usually through taxes or regulations. Is it any surprise then when average citizens start to say the same thing? I've been wronged, therefore I have the right to come and take some of what you have.
Well, now you're touching on a very profound point here, which is that this idea of looting has now become official government policy. In other words, that the government is being licensed to be a kind of legal looter of people's wealth. We're a wealthy country. We do all kinds of things for the disadvantaged. Now, it'd be one thing if Obama were to say, listen, wealth creators, I admire you and I want to thank you because we've got a whole bunch of Americans who are sitting in the bandwagon and you're pulling it. And thank you for what you do for your country. But no, Obama doesn't do that. He goes to the guys who are in the bandwagon and he says, you are the most morally wonderful people in America. That's because you're victims and you're entitled. And then he goes to the people pulling the bandwagon and he goes, you greedy, selfish, materialistic people, you should be pulling a lot harder. Well, that's going to convince a lot of people pulling the bandwagon. Well, gee, maybe I should go sit in the bandwagon. It's a little more comfortable in there. So, yes, I think what we're seeing here is a kind of vicious ingratitude toward the wealth creators whom Obama hates. And meanwhile, he admires the kind of people who ultimately are, in some senses, feeling entitled, feeling that they're wronged by society. America did it to them, and he's their champion.
President Obama, I'm talking to Dinesh D'Souza, who did, of course, 2016 Obama's America, which was a fantastic movie. Most recently, America, Imagine a World Without Her, the book and the movie. One of the things about that meta-narrative that you mentioned, the president himself yesterday came out and said, well, we have to be concerned about how many Americans have been left behind. And yet the young man at the center of this whole incident who died because he was shot by the police, and I think the facts on the ground will show that he was shot correctly. It's sad that he lost his life, but when you threaten a cop, then that's what happens. But he was not an American who'd been left behind. What we've been able to learn about Michael Brown is he had finished high school, graduated, had already signed up to take college classes this fall. So that sounds like any other relatively successful young man or woman who's leaving high school and going on to college. He was not one of those left behind, yet President Obama overlaid that narrative because everybody nodded and said, oh, yeah, all the people left behind, they have a right to feel aggrieved. This young man didn't have a reason to be aggrieved. He had a great future ahead of him, apparently.
Well, it seems that what's going on here is that Obama, who has himself been, I think, careful about the race card in his presidency, he campaigned as a non-racial president. He certainly has not been explicit in using race, except on a few occasions. There was the Harvard incident with Henry Louis Gates. There was Trayvon Martin. But in general, he hasn't done that. But now it appears that he's using Holder as his race man, so that all the pent-up rage of Obama, my first book, The Roots of Obama's Rage, and this is a man full of envy, resentment, and rage, but this rage can get displaced because he has guys like Sharpton and Holder to do his work for him, and then he can come out above the fray and go, oh, gee, well, I'm just balancing all the alternatives here.
Interesting, too, that you said balancing, because one of the comments he made that stuck in my ear was when he said, I don't want to put my thumb on the scale, but I'm sending Eric Holder to Ferguson tomorrow. Now, I thought, isn't there a cognitive dissonance there where he says, I'm not putting my thumb on the scale, but I'm sending the attorney general to this little town for this one incident?
Right. I know. And then there's, it's so funny here because there are some cases where the government jumps in and they act all concerned, like justice has got to be served. Hey, there's a Marine sitting in Mexico who took a wrong turn.
Andrew Tamarisi.
He's probably researching his racial heritage right now to see if he's 1/16th American Indian or perhaps a little bit of African American. Maybe Eric Holder will get him out of prison.
Dinesh D'Souza is with me in the studio. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm willing to entertain phone calls, but it has to be a good, quick question. It's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to me, talk@LarsLarson.com. And the one thing you could do for yourself and your family, go see the movie, America, Imagine a World Without Her. We'll be back in a moment. Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you on board and glad to have Dinesh D'Souza with me in the studio. The book, the movie, and the DVD will be coming out soon of America, Imagine a World Without Her. Dinesh, we've got some calls, but I'm gonna move through these quickly. One caller wants to know how you stand up to the kind of backlash that you're getting, because you've come under attack from the Obama administration for a while. So how do you bear up under all that?
Well, there are different types of backlash. The backlash from the political left, quite frankly, I enjoy. Those guys don't realize that. I mean, every time I get on Twitter, like, you have 10 paid leftists who come on and blast the heck out of me. Now, you know, perhaps a normal person would feel discouraged and think, why am I doing this and so on. The way I look at it is, I must be doing something effective. Keep it coming, boys. You know, so I like it. And I don't mind the yelling and screaming that goes on around the movie. We want to take the movie and show it on campuses come in the fall, and we're going to get kind of backlash to that too, but it's backlash that we welcome.
But that would be a good message to take to American college campuses, so that as these young, many of them are going to be qualified to vote, they're going to want to head to the polls. Well, I want them to see the truth about their country, because it's disturbing that there are people in our country who think we're inherently bad based on a false set of actions and also representations.
The left is not mad because what the film says is false. They're actually mad because what the film says is true. We have footage, for example, rare footage never seen in America of Saul Alinsky. Now, this is the guy who was the bridge, the mentor of both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Obama never met Alinsky, but he heard, you know, there's a shakedown artist in Chicago. I want to be a shakedown artist. Off he goes to Chicago to learn the techniques, which he learned very well. And then Hillary had a very personal connection with Alinsky through high school and college, and wrote a thesis on him and so on. So here you see Alinsky, and he's kind of a gangster. He's a very unappealing guy. And there he is, and that's really him. And we also have all these indictments against America, and then we bring out all these facts. You know, there were 3,500 African-American slave owners. They owned more than 10,000 black slaves. Well, even the educated Ivy League kid doesn't know this. Now, they don't know it not because they're stupid. They don't know it because their professors have made sure it's not in the textbooks. They're not told it. Why? Because it spoils the meta-narrative. There's a meta-narrative, which is that slavery in America was purely racial. Whites are the bad guys. Blacks are the good guys. And there are all kinds of wrinkles to that narrative. The central premise is not false, but there are wrinkles to the narrative. Most Southerners who fought in the Civil War didn't own slaves. And there were free blacks who owned slaves, but not a handful of them. There were quite a few. And some of them owned large plantations. This was going on in the South. So all of this kind of spoils the clarity of the leftist propaganda, I might say. And then here it is in the movie. And so it tells the intelligent viewer of the movie, there's a lot more I'm not being told. I need to go find out. And that's the project the left does not want to occur.
You're listening to the voice of Dinesh D'Souza, who I have the privilege of having in the studio today. I told you about meeting a black woman on an airplane flight and describing to her parts of your movie and saying there was this woman who became a millionaire. And she, this was immediately post-slavery, and she immediately named the woman. And this woman that I was meeting on the airplane, ran into her. She was sitting in the seat next to me and happened to be from the town I'm from. She said she works at the school district. And I said, how is it that I got all the way through school without hearing this story of this black woman in just post-slavery America who became a millionaire? And again, is that one of those things that's not presented to American kids? Because it doesn't fit the meta-narrative that if you've told everybody that even today, 150 years later, blacks are not able to make it in America without the government's help, that it would be belied by the idea that 150 years ago, this woman was making a fantastic living simply by being a smart entrepreneur.
Yeah, here's a woman, born right after slavery, and in the segregated South, when you have the Black Codes, you have the Ku Klux Klan, you have Jim Crow, she becomes the first self-made self-made female millionaire in America. Now, why does that spoil the leftist narrative? Because the leftist narrative is that segregation was an uninterrupted form of oppression. So if you suddenly see black businesses, black-owned banks, kind of a flourishing entrepreneurial sector in the black community, which was much of it, by the way, destroyed after the civil rights movement, when a lot of those entrepreneurs went to work for the federal government, so that the entrepreneurial sector gave way to African Americans basically now focusing on the government sector, where there's actually less opportunities for innovation and so on. So all of this is the backstory, but it's the hidden part of the American story. So in some ways, you can almost call our movie and my book, you know, America, the Untold Story, because it's telling you facts that are not disputed. There's not an iota of a fact in the film or the book that has been shaken in the slightest. So it's all true, but it doesn't fit the narrative. And that's what makes it so subversive. And when people read the book or watch the film, they feel empowered because they're now equipped to become very dangerous Americans and go out there, because if they encounter a leftist, they've got some surprises in store for them.
Dinesh, do you go out and read the lefty reviews of your movie? And have they taken the time to read it, or are they just trying to ignore it?
No, many of them don't pay attention to the argument. They're so blinded by their own prejudice and self-righteousness. Self-righteousness is a great enemy of truth because you suffuse yourself with indignation. And then you say things like, how dare this foreigner come, you know, from not from America, come on and tell us about our history and so on. And so it is this kind of attack that they begin with. And then they can't listen to what I'm actually saying. They literally say things like, D'Souza makes an attempt to defend slavery. Now, anyone who watches the film knows that some of our most vivid scenes show the brutality, the isolation, the humiliation of slavery. I distinguish between indentured servitude, which was itself very harsh and cruel because it didn't have the element of racial subordination that slavery implies. So it's all there in the film. I saw Michael Eric Dyson, who's one of the leftists who's in the film, and I asked him, I said, hey, Mike, did we portray you fairly in the film? He goes, Dinesh, absolutely. And he goes, I was very pleased to see that a lot of my fellow progressives were all allowed to say their piece, and you didn't jump on us, you didn't yell at us, you let us say our thing, and then you did your thing.
Before we end this hour, what's your take on what Hillary Clinton is going to do to run for president? And for instance, how does she distance herself from a past that includes Saul Alinsky and an awful lot of policies of the current president?
Well, I think Hillary is going to pursue the same chameleonic strategy that Obama did. When Obama encountered Alinsky, he learned very well two lessons from Alinsky. The first is you have to clean yourself up. You can't come across as a leftist. You can't look like one. You can't sound like one. You can't have a goatee. You can't wear a leather jacket. You can't have a cigarette dangling from your lips. All, by the way, characteristics of the early Obama. So Obama cleans himself up. He even says he takes voice lessons to sound like a Midwestern guy, a bit like you, Lars, so as to diffuse the idea that he's some kind of a radical. And the second thing about Alinsky is that deception is a key element of politics. You have to fool people into thinking you're their friend, even though you actually want to destroy them. And so with Hillary, you've got many Hillarys. You've got the early Hillary, the radical Hillary. Of course, earlier you had the Goldwater girl Hillary, Hillary the senator lying low, Hillary the Obama secretary of state. Now the Hillary is trying to run a little bit away from Obama. So which Hillary is it going to be?
And if you want to see it, you've got to go see the movie. When it comes out in DVD, get a copy of it, take it home, set up your living room, invite your family and friends and neighbors, tell them to watch it, tell them to read the book, America, Imagine a World Without Her by Dinesh D'Souza and producer Gerald Molan. Dinesh, thank you so very much.
Lars, always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.